Hello, everyone. Welcome back to episode 4 of Sticky Hands Beekeeping and Mead Making Podcast,
where we discuss beekeeping here in the northeast of Pennsylvania and mead making for anyone around the world.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, before we get started, I just wanted to tell you I'm excited to get to do this podcast today because I'm actually getting to sip one of your concoctions that you made and you brought to me a couple weeks ago. Do you remember what you brought to me?
I do, Brian.
Yeah, it's good. I'm sipping on it right now. It's it's that pomegranate blackberry mead that you made. Do you remember what honey you used on that? Because I'm trying to figure it out, but my palate isn't that sophisticated yet.
Yeah, and that one I happen to use orange blossom honey.
Okay.
And don't forget, you were just a little bit on the rude side. You forgot to introduce yourself.
Oh, I did. I am a rude man, am I? Well, my name is Brian Perucci.
And I'm
your co-host. And this is my uncle,
Brett Zempel.
Brett Zempel. Yeah. And we are going to go over a few things today.
And one and of we're them was the meat right you were before. Sipping on.
Oh, yeah. One of them was the meat I'm sipping on. I think that's something we should definitely do in another podcast or so. We'll have like a what are they drinking episode or something. Or maybe we'll do like a, you know, a certain mead while we're doing our little podcast. Or I think that'd be kind of cool. And I encourage the audience to drink some mead or whatever they like, their favorite craft beer or a glass of wine. A spirit, a distilled spirit, if they so indulge. And if none of that appeals to you, if you could always maybe drink your favorite, any favorite refreshment.
Yeah, like a kombucha or a yun.
Anything. I'm down with that. That's cool. Speaking of which, I want to get off topic, but you had this interesting idea that you brought to my attention a couple days ago when we were talking. You asked me about if I ever heard about kombucha or if I've ever made it, correct?
Correct. Yes, sir.
So I've drank it. It's not my favorite cup of fermented tea. Ha ha ha. I've had a few and I'm still trying to find one that really, really is palatable for me at least. And I think it's just because I'm your typical, I have that typical palate where I need that. I like that sweet sweetness level or factor to really come through. And obviously with the kombucha, it's more on that sour note side.
Right. That, which is what I was going to ask you. What is it that you didn't like, but you, it's the sour note that you don't like. So you don't like sour beers then?
I don't normally. Once in a while, I like a good goza. Or I believe that's how I hope I'm saying it right. If I'm not, please correct me.
Well, how about lemonade during the summer? You don't drink lemonade?
I do. I like shandies. I like some things. I think I don't like those overly sour beers. I don't like the lambics. I really don't like the overly sour bread. The beers made with bread or doused with the lacto.
Right.
It's not my thing. Right. Usually.
So, which brings up an interesting point. Which is what I think you might have been getting to. Is that kombucha could be an interesting thing to try to integrate into mead making. I don't know if anybody's ever done it. You hear a lot of talk about titratable acids. Abbreviated TA, right? So that's the amount of acid that's left or that the beverage ferments out to. And it provides a balance, right? So balance, but over the, let's just say, compared to the sweetness. And some people, like you, don't particularly care for the tartness. So it's put me onto a new thing about trying to actually brew some kombuchas and Junes, as some people call them, or Yun, J-U-N, which is made with green tea as opposed to kombucha that's made with black tea. So I'm just going to have to whip one up and see if we can get you to get on the good foot and get some probiotics in your system.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you being so concerned about my health there, Uncle. I know that we were, that was more of an impromptu little discussion there, but let's get back to, I think, the more on the beekeeping side. And I know we had a pretty busy last week or so. I went to a little seminar, a little speech on honeybees last week. And I know that you,
who was speaking?
It was a gentleman. So I saw an ad in the paper for a local library by where I live. They had a gentleman doing a little lecture on honeybees. And I just said to call up and reserve a seat. So here I am thinking, wow, this is going to be cool. I'm going to head up there. There's going to be like a big audience. And I'm thinking I'm going to, I didn't know what to think. It's my first lecture on bees at a library. So I didn't know what to think. So I call up and the lady's like, oh, sure, you can come and we'll reserve you a seat. And I'm like, okay. So I show up and it was really cold. Like, granted, it was that was last week when we were in that extreme polar vortex wind, tundra like cold weather snap that we had. So that might have kept the crowds at bay, but I marched on to the lecture, and I was able to see me and three other people were able to see this gentleman give a nice little lecture about honeybees. Very brief
overview.
Overview. He didn't go into depth. He answered a few questions. He let us look. He looked through some slides, but not nice guy. Really knowledgeable. Very. I hope that maybe we'll be able to get him on for an interview in the next upcoming episodes. I think I have his information. I gave it to you. I know you reached out.
I did talk to him. It's just, some logistical things that I have to go through. Apparently, getting interviews with the general public, especially that somebody that might have credentials, isn't quite as easy as you think it would be. So there's some logistics that I have to go through to get it done. Which actually brings.
You're telling me. Wait, are you trying to say that people don't want to talk to us two yahoos on a podcast? Wait, what's
wrong? Right.
We're harmless. What do we know? No, but I think you're right. I think we're very new to this, guy. If anyone listening,
I don't think it's the point that we're new. I think it's the general public. Everybody's sue happy, so people are worried about getting into a car accident because they don't want to get sued. They don't want to let people on their property in case they trip and fall. Blah blah blah. So I think people are a little bit more guarded with their name and what and how you're going to use their name and how you're going to portray them. We mean it in a very innocent, informative way where we can pass on the information that this gentleman has and hopefully inspire, and maybe he'll teach somebody something or teach us even something that we don't know. But unfortunately, you have to gain people's, he doesn't know us from Adam, right? So you have to gain their trust, and that's part of, I guess that's going to be part of the program,
Yeah, I definitely, part of the process. But I know I definitely think he would be someone that would definitely bring some added value to the podcast. And we had somebody on last week that we interviewed. It was a personal friend, a dear friend of ours. And I thought she did a great job. She was very super excited. I talked to her since. And I told her, you're a celebrity now. You've gotten a couple of views on podcast.
Actually, I gave you a great segue into another topic. You could have gone back to Barb, but I don't know him from Adam, which
I heard that, and I was going to jump on it, but I thought it was too easy. So, speaking of a guy named Adam, didn't you also meet a? So I guess you're right. I could have jumped on that, but I see where you're going with that. But okay, I'm going to pick up on my segue skills, pickup skills. But you're right. Okay, so back to Adam. So I know there's a gentleman that he's a mead maker, right?
Yep.
And met him last week. You want to tell the audience a little bit about that?
So Brian had sent me a link to this little workshop that Adam was doing out of his meadery, Haymaker Meadery, down there in
Montgomeryville, PA.
Pennsylvania. He's got a nice little space where he's producing commercial meads. And he put on this like 2-hour little workshop, how to put together a mead. And I sort of wanted to look and see what he was doing and get a little tour of the place. And he said, well, this is pretty much everything I have. This, what you see is what it is. And he has this nice little tasting bar, I'll call it. And very interesting, trying to get an interview with him as well. I think it'd be very interesting to sit down with him and Brian and do some tastings and just discuss his whole process, how he got into mead making and get it right from him rather than me just relaying some of the stories he had told. A very interesting person, very passionate about what he does. And I actually held off on doing any tastings while I was there because I really want to sit down with him and as I'm sure you do, Brian, and discuss the actual meads that we're drinking with him and sort of discover them together, as a trio, the mead maker, that being Adam, and you, Brian, and myself. So hopefully we have a treat in store for you in the very near future where we get to interview Adam.
Oh, that's the only reason why I'm here. I'm just in it for the free samples.
Oh, boy.
No, but I think that's awesome. I think
is that why I have to bring down free samples every time I come to see you?
Yes, I'm an expensive date.
Hmm. All right. The other interesting thing that I did this week, in fact, just today, was I had the opportunity to go down and build some bee boxes with Mike, who's a gentleman who's the farm manager down at the Rodale Institute. And I'm actually going to go back there again, and we're going to have a discussion about bees and talk about queen rearing and some other issues. He's located about 2 hours from me, southeast of me, in around the Allentown area and that general vicinity. And so what he has to discuss is very applicable to beekeeping here in northeastern Pennsylvania. Is it exact? No. What he does will mostly apply to how we want to keep and manage bees here. So that'll be another interesting interview again. And it's just with him, it's a slightly different take on the red tape. He's got because he doesn't own the company, he is an employee. We have to submit paperwork so he can get permission from the communications department and whoever and all the other powers to be to sign off on him actually doing an interview with us. But he's got some terrific experience. He's a protege of Kurt Webster, who's a New Hampshire beekeeper. And he's a treatment-free beekeeper, no chemicals in the hives at all. So he's keeping bees in a very natural way.
So when you delve a little bit more into the treatment-free aspect, so what exactly does that mean? I mean, he doesn't even put smoke in their face? 20s.
No, smoke is not a treatment. Smoke is okay. Smoke is more of a. Yeah, it's okay. Smoke is a disguise. Actually, I'm going to just interject something really quick. I think it'd be really cute to interview my brother Eric, because we were we were chatting, and I said, "Oh man, this would be a great interview," because he knows nothing about bees, absolutely zip. And he's trying to tell me I should put heaters in my hives, and we can get them to work all winter and make honey and make babies and do all this stuff. And I thought it would be kind of cute, because here's a person that knows absolutely zippity-doo-dah about bees. And I have a feeling that there could be quite a few people that might be in that same predicament, that they want to learn about bees and they want to keep bees. And sometimes they see these harebrained schemes on YouTube about heaters and hives, because I've actually seen that. And so I think it'd be kind of cute. I think that's the right word, cute, to interview him, because he's coming from a place that he knows nothing about it. And he's asking questions that seem reasonable to some degree, you know, and they just have to be answered. And not only answered for him, but hopefully answered in such a way that the public isn't totally offended.
I definitely would say I'm a neophyte when it comes to honeybee knowledge, and I think I'm a little bit more versed than the average layman when it comes to honeybees. They're very interesting. It's just a super interesting and very, like, actually dynamic, like, just the everything that involves them. It's like there's so much involved in, that goes into it. They're such a very creature,
right?
You know, and yeah, so there's just like so much to learn. Just when you think you've learned enough, you haven't. You know, there's so much more to learn about them. And just the way they
operate. Well, where our match is made in heaven, so to speak, is that you are very proficient in being able to taste and pull things apart and dissect what, you know, meads, let's just say, that I've made, or beers or meads that other people have made, and say, other than saying, "Oh, this is good, I like it," you can pick it apart. So where, you know, I work on the technical aspect of maybe putting it together or this and that, you're like the person that does the critiquing. So, because if you're standing on an island, you know, of course, everything probably tastes great, right? But if you put it out there, you know, it'll be a little bit different. Anyway, I wanted to answer your question about treatment free beekeeping. So treatment free beekeeping, the short answer is that, and this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with organic. So although they could somewhere cross paths, those two words, it's the treatment free beekeepers are not predicated, that idea is not predicated around being organic. They just don't want to treat the bees with chemicals in their hives and put chemicals into the wax, which will eventually wind up in, well, it doesn't really wind up in makeup, because the people that buy the wax for makeup, you know, they do all kinds of tests to make sure that it is, in fact, chemical free. So we don't want the chemicals in the end product, that being the honey, or if you go even further and make mead, you don't want those chemicals getting into any of that stuff. And it's just a way of thinking about keeping bees. Like, nobody treats bees in the wild, right? The bees leave in trees and numerous other places, but nobody's gassing them with, you know, or putting chemical fumigation or apivar, you know, to take care of the mite situation or some other fungus or some other disease that they might have. bees are taking care of themselves. Or if they happen to get sick, that colony dies off, and it's the strongest will survive. It's an attrition of nature. They go by the wayside, and the stronger colonies keep pressing on.
Very Darwinian. Yeah, I get that. So it's more ethical. It's more on it's more on the ethical standpoint of taking care of the bees, because organic means that you'd have to certifiably know where those bees are going to get the nectar and pollen that they would be to make in their honey. Correct.
So, I don't know much about being organic, but I know that you're right. You have to be certified. Somebody has to come in and look at your stuff, and it seems to me like, and maybe I should research that for another podcast about what it would mean to be an organic beekeeper. You know, personally, I think it's a little bit off the hook, but treatment free. I agree with. To date, I have not treated my bees. You know.
That's great, and maybe that's something that you can keep doing. I guess it all depends on what your perspective is on raising bees. And from what I gather, you care about them and you're passionate about them, and you're not looking at them as just a profit end profit gain. You know, it's more than that. If they're like your friends, you know, they're. And I think that when you make that correlation to the bees and that you care about them and why would you want to do anything that would possibly hurt them, you know? And I understand that.
And not to be confused to some, you know, there are commercial beekeepers that either produce queens or produce bees or produce honey that are using chemical treatments. Now, the FDA and a whole bunch of other people, whoever are passing all these laws, if you follow the guidelines, the honey will be safe, that's for sure, if you're applying the treatments in a certain way, but the wax won't. And, you know, these are commercial guys. These are guys that have 1,000 colonies, 1,500 colonies, 10,000 colonies, and they make their living, and they provide incomes to people that help them take care of their bees and move bees around the country and help pollinate the almonds and the apples and the oranges. Unless somebody in the audience knows of a massive beekeeper that is treatment free, I'm pretty sure that most commercial beekeepers on the huge scale, they're all treating their hives, and that's not a put down in any way. That's a function of something they have to do, you know, to stay in business. We're talking about a treatment-free beekeeping from a different perspective, from a different point of view, where it's maybe you're keeping 200 colonies, 300, 500 colonies. And it's just like a way of life, I guess you could put it, you know. It's a way of treating the bees, and I guess what you get out of it. So that's my take on it. That probably will be an evolution over time, and I'll be able to better explain it from a more technical standpoint, I guess. If you're interested, that is.
Well, I know that that's something you could also maybe tag or link a few articles on your blog, Sticky Hands Beekeeping and Me Making blog. What is that address again? Yeah.
Another good segue. I like that. Was your segue to me. I like that.
I tried. I did. I'm setting it up for you.
I've been busy. Really busy trying to get some of these social media channels going. I have my YouTube channel set up. I don't have one video on there yet, but it's ready to go. I have the blog up and running with I think it's one or two whole posts. But, you know, with my schedule, with my grandson 3 days a week and other stuff around the farm here, it's been hectic, but I am making a lot of progress. And I will do that, put some links to this podcast and to treatment-free beekeeping articles and such on the blog. That's awesome. it's actually stickyhandsbeekeepingandmeadmaking.com.
Ah, okay.
Really long. It's an awesome long one.
It is, but I feel like it's good. At least people might be a good way for them to remember if they remember the podcast, and you know, they'll be able to link to that one as well. And you'll have that in the show notes as well, right?
I will. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Well, it sounds like you had a very busy, like a bee week before. And with that being said, I know we went a little bit past our normal time of about 20 minutes, right?
I think we said we were going to get 15 minute sound bites, but we're slowly but surely working our way up.
Aren't we? We're building out that frame.
Oh, geez.
But it was nice to chit chat with you, as always. I actually just finished my glass of your awesome palm blackberry mead here. So we're going to end this podcast so I can get a refill. But it was awesome chatting with you. And I hope everyone that stayed with us and listened to it, we appreciate that. Come buzz by us again for our next episode on Sticky Hands
Beekeeping and Mead Making, for beekeepers in northeastern Pennsylvania and for mead making around the world.
Goodbye, folks.
Have a good night and have a great week.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.